Now please help me welcome Brian Kay from the New Dawn.
My name is Brian. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
everybody. It's good to be here tonight. I rarely iron a shirt, so I appreciate the opportunity to iron without burning the shirt. That was good. The places where I drank in this world, you didn't have to wear a shirt with a collar or a tie. So my sobriety dates the 15th of January, 2007. My home group is here on Saturday mornings, 8:30, big book meeting. If you're not doing anything on a Saturday and you can get here, we'd love to have you be part of that. We get about 30 or 40 people here on a Saturday morning, reading the literature from cover to cover, and then we start over again. It takes about 13 months or so to work back around. That's been my home group for almost 15 years. So we've been through the book a few times. I have been taken through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous by a sponsor. Have been back through them a few times over the years, and have had the privilege and honor to sponsor other people, other men in this program, and watch them get what was given to me in the form of a happy, joyous, and free life, which is what recovery has given me. I spent a lot of time thinking about what I was going to talk about, and this and that and the other thing, more so than I've spoken a few times. If you stay sober long enough, you get on everybody's hit list. And are asked to speak at various times, but I guess I gave it a lot more thought recently about what I was going to talk about. But I usually start kind of in the middle, and then go back and tell you what I was like, and then I talk more about sobriety. The interesting thing is, I remember the first time I spoke at a meeting. I think I was about 90 days sober. That's pretty much on the to-do list when you get sober. Your sponsor says you're going to speak at this meeting, and not for the full hour. You usually get about 20 minutes, And I remember wondering what I was going to talk about. And he said, well, why don't you just get a piece of paper and sit down and write? And I'm somebody who likes to write. I've journaled for 15 years. So I started writing about my drinking history. Not a lot of recovery to write about at 90 days sober, but I wrote a lot about my drinking history. And 13 pages later, I was like, okay, now I'm ready to speak. Well, they didn't let me talk for 13 pages worth of speaking, But it did give me a chance to to clarify what my drinking career had been like. But I got sober on a Monday. The 15th of January 2007 was a Monday. It was Martin Luther King Day, so there is some symbolism to being free at last. I didn't realize it at the time. Like most good spiritual material, it comes later after you've had a chance to look back on it. But it was a Monday. I came home from work. I did have a job at the time. I was living in a one-bedroom apartment with my son, who was 16 at the time. I have two children, a daughter and a son. My son was living with me at the time. And I came home from work that day, and it was nothing magical or life-changing about that day. I've been through a lot of shit, excuse my language, in my drinking, and I'll talk a little bit about it when I fill in the backstory. But that day was just a Monday. I did not have a car or a driver's license, so I was riding my bike to work. One thing I do know now when I drive around, because I do have a driver's license now, I drive around and I see men in work boots riding bicycles. It's probably not for fitness. It's probably a necessity. That was me riding around on a bicycle to work and back. But I came home that night, started drinking. I was a daily drinker. I drank every day, anytime I could, I drank. So I came home, started drinking, had a good buzz going. And my son in the other room he had the bedroom in the house, the apartment. And he was making noise or making a problem, something I didn't agree with, breathing heavy or whatever. I was not a happy drunk. I was a pretty angry guy. So I went in to have a talk with him and tell him what I thought about whatever he was doing. And an argument ensued between the two of us that turned physical. At the time, he's 16. He's about 6 foot tall now. He was taller than me and had put up with a lot of my stuff for a lot of years. And I think it was the straw that broke the camel's back for him, too. And we got into it. He put his hands around my throat, and I had my hands on him. But I think if he could have had any choice, he would have liked to choke the life out of me that night after everything he had been through. And we were arguing back and forth, and he said to me, and I won't use the F word, but he said, why don't you just effing quit drinking? That's what he yelled in my face. And I don't know if the question had never been posed to me in that manner before. I know people had expressed their concerns about my drinking before. I usually eliminated those people from my life or just put them off or moved away or did something to avoid the problem. But that night, I looked at him and I had no answer for that question. For once in my life, I'd admit I had no answer for that question. So I dropped my hands. Luckily, he dropped his hands as well. And I picked up the phone and the phone book and I went in the bathroom and I cried. And I cried a lot when I drank and mostly when I got in trouble because I was in trouble. But I cried that night, but I took an action for the first time about my drinking. AA is easy to find in the phone book. It's in the A's. It's near Aardvark or whatever you're looking for in the phone book. I'm glad it was easy to find because I had a pretty good buzz going that night. And I called 215-721-3656, and that's the hotline number for this district. This meeting falls under this District 47, and it was the hotline number. And I guess I was out of answers, out of Plan Bs, and I was looking for some help for the first time in my life. And a woman answered the phone, and she took my name and number, and then she hung up. And I was like, that wasn't very helpful at all. It turns out they get your number and they have somebody off a list, a volunteer list that calls you back. And somebody called me back almost immediately that night. Somebody who was very near and dear to my heart, until they passed away. It's been a few years since they've been gone, but it was not the most friendly individual, and I found out later he was a crotchety old man, but he was sober. And, I don't know what he had to say that night. I don't think he talked about spiritual principles. I don't think he talked about higher power at all. But what he did tell me was that I didn't have to feel like I was feeling anymore. And he talked a little bit about his drinking. I was drunk at the time, so I disagree when people say that you can't talk to somebody who's been drinking. Certainly, if they're going to be belligerent and not listen, I guess there's better places to put our energy. But if he would have asked me that night, he did ask me if I was drinking, and if he would have said, well, tell you what, call me. Here's my number. Call me tomorrow when you haven't been drinking. I don't think I'm standing here today. I think the window was very small for my powerlessness, or at least what I was willing to admit at the time. And he talked to me, and I listened. And he said, are you drinking now? I said, yes. He said, pour out whatever you're drinking. Go to bed. He said, do you have a job? I said, yes, I have a job. He said, get up tomorrow, go to work, and I'll pick you up after work tomorrow, and I'll take you to a meeting. And that was my introduction to AA. It came through another individual, one alcoholic talking to another on the phone. And I know when I hung up that phone, I did something that I've never done in my life. I poured out a drink. I was drinking Busch Light, which is a sad way to go out of your drinking career. It was part of a 30-pack that had three friends still left over. They hung around the house for a few months because I probably was on the fence about what I was going to do. But I poured out the rest of that drink that night, and I don't remember a lot about that night except that I didn't feel quite so alone anymore. At least I knew there was one other person that understood what I was going through. I didn't know what to expect the next day. I've never been to AA in my life. I've never been to recovery. I've never been to rehab. I've never been to detox. I've been to jail in four different states, but that didn't qualify me for looking for a program of recovery. But I did go to sleep that night. I woke up the next morning, did not pick up a drink, which was no guarantee because I was a person who drank in the morning. I did go to work, and I did not drink through the rest of that day. And as much of a miracle as that first night was, and which I can only give credit to my higher power for helping me pick up that phone that night and admit I needed help, that second day was almost, or that first full day was almost more of a miracle, because I had time to get my thoughts together the second day. And I don't know about you, but I got in a lot of trouble drinking. And when I would get in trouble, it would be bad. And I vowed never to drink again. I can't believe I did this. I promised foxhole prayers up left and right, up and down. But when you gave me some time to think about what I had been through, I would think like, well, how bad was it? Or, you know, maybe it was just bad luck that night, or I was feeling kind of rough. It'll be fine. Today will be a different day. So that day, that next day that came about, instead of doing that like I usually did it, because I could have played it off, like he was going to pick me up outside. I could just not go outside. You had to have a code to get in my building. I could just not show up, and who's going to be the wiser, you know? But what I did that night when I came home from work is I went and sat outside. and I waited to meet a person I'd never met before, to go to a place I've never been before, to address a problem I had never addressed in my life, and that was my drinking. And that started my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. That was a Tuesday. He took me to a meeting in Percocet. I don't remember a lot about the meeting. I was feeling pretty jittery. I could have used some detox, I would guess. I detoxed at home, not the smartest move, but I went to that first meeting, and lo and behold, there were 25, 30 people there that were not drinking as well, and that was my introduction to AA, and things continued from there. But I'll go back and fill in and bring us up to what happened, because that's what happened that night. What we were like, I grew up in an alcoholic home. My father drank heavily, and he was an angry, violent drunk. There was a lot of abuse in my house, physically and verbally. He was not a happy drunk, drank all the time, and liked to hit, and liked to yell, and liked to call names, and it was a tough home. And I didn't take a lot out of that. I had a loving mother who gave me a good childhood. I did not pick up a drink till I was 16 years old, but I always vowed, and I don't know, a lot of people do this, when they grow up in an alcoholic house, I'm never going to be like that person. I do not want to be like my father. He's a horrible person. He's evil. I wish he was dead half the time. I can't stand the guy. I'm not going to be like that. And, had good intentions not to be like that person. Somewhere, you know, I grew up and it was a fearful house to live in, but at 16 years old, I found a drink. And what had happened is earlier in the year we had moved. I grew up in Pennsylvania, northeast Pennsylvania, up in the Pocono area. And from second grade we moved there till I was a junior in high school. That's where all my friends were. And what happened, my father's job relocated him to California. And if you want to see a culture shock, take a kid from Pennsylvania, northeast Pennsylvania, and move him to the central coast of California and watch him freak out. And that's what happened. And not a very extroverted person to begin with. I did not put myself out there. I was not very social, not feel very comfortable around other people. But I had a kid on my baseball team who said, I'm having a party at my house. My parents are out of town, having a party at my house. Why don't you come sleep over and it'll be a great time. And I took a chance on it. My parents were probably glad to see me trying to fit in, and I went over to his house. Well, they were drinking. Go figure. They were going to drink that night. And that was the first time I ever drank, and I drank alcoholically from the very first time. Some people ease into it. Some people, like, go for years without drinking. I heard somebody speak the other night who didn't start drinking seriously until they were in their 50s. I drank alcoholically from that first time in California when I was 16 years old. But I know what drinking, people drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. I loved what it did for me. All of a sudden, I felt like I was part of that group that night. I was funny. I was, outgoing. We did irresponsible things that night. We drove around town. I don't know who drove, but we drove around town and I drank. I could not get enough. I understand today why I couldn't get enough drinking, but that night I just drank and drank and drank. And I was one of those guys that I continued to be in my drink. It was like one of those guys that would not go to sleep. Like, when is that guy going to go to sleep? He won't go to sleep. But that night, my friend said to me, one thing, whatever you do, don't throw up in my sleeping bag. He let me borrow his sleeping bag. He said, don't throw up in my sleeping bag. So what did I do? I threw up all night in his sleeping bag. I had my first violent reaction to drinking the same night. I was sick for 2 or 3 days, and I lost a friend because he ended up with a sleeping bag full of throw up. So that was how my drinking career started. And after that, I guess that I was really sick for a couple of days, and it kind of scared me away from alcohol for a while. And we moved back to Pennsylvania. I ended up back in school with the kids I grew up with. Drank here and there, always drank alcoholically though. There was never enough to drink when I drank. I was always the guy that was making trouble when I drank, and guy who was breaking stuff and would not go to sleep. And that's how I drank. It didn't happen a lot, but it did growing through high school. I went to college. I went to Temple University for a year. They taught me to drink a little bit more. You go to fraternity parties and drink a little bit more. Always drank alcoholically. Always drank too much. Always act like an idiot. Drank through a hurricane one year. I was outside in the middle of a hurricane drinking. That's the kind of stuff I did. quit college after a year, didn't feel like it was for me, and I joined the military. I was in the Army for 12 years, 1986 to 1998, served my country proudly, stayed one step ahead of trouble most of the time. One thing the Army did teach me was how to drink with gusto. It became like a team sport. You had guys in your unit. I know you have friends, and some people can relate. They've been in the military, but you did everything together. You relied in a war situation. You relied on this guy to save your life. You were more than friends. You were closer than that. So when you went out and partied and had fun, you did that stuff together too. And, it turned into a lot of trouble. I ended up getting my first two DUI. I got my first DUI in Colorado. I got my second DUI in Texas, both before I was 21 years old. And it was all part of drinking with a bunch of guys and hanging out. But even when you got in trouble, you were like, oh, man, that was great. Wasn't that – I can't believe it. We made it through that night and all that stuff, that great – that camaraderie thing that took place in drinking. And that's how it went for a while. Somewhere in my early 20s, I met my first wife. She was married to a friend of mine at the time. That didn't stop me. Put a few drinks in me. Right and wrong goes out the window. Like, I have no inhibitions. No, I liked her. I really didn't care. This guy was my friend. Selfish and self-centered. That's what we are as alcoholics. And I was the epitome of that. And, she was game. So I figured, well, we're two adults. What better thing? And you know how things can progress from there. And, I often joked about my best friend, got out of that relationship because she ended up with me, and we ended up married for 7 years based on that. And, he ended up with the better deal on that because it's not a happy marriage. It was not born out of anything, sacred or God divined. It was really a train wreck. But that didn't stop us from going on for 7 years. She had two kids. We had two kids together, my son, who's now 32, my daughter, who's 28. And I kind of got my act together for a while. I realized, in fact, we were married not very long, a couple weeks or whatever. And I went out with my friends like I always did. And I came home and she was crying. And I said, well, I guess that's the end of me going out with my friends. Can't do that anymore. And the drinking kind of went on the back burner. When I did drink, it was always too much. It was always too excess. It was always alcoholically. But the frequency of the drinking had died down. And that's how it went for a few years. I said, I'm going to have to get responsible here, take care of my family. My son was there now. I'm going to have to take care of and be responsible, somewhat of a responsible adult. And I kind of did that for a while. The military, I started to be a responsible person in the military. I was into some different activities. I went back to college and got my degree. So that's how things went for a while. I was in an unhappy marriage. I was angry. I was restless, irritable, discontent. I was all the things the big book talks about an alcoholic without a drink is. And it was only a matter of time till I found drinking again. It was really only a matter of time till that marriage ended, because it was on borrowed time from the beginning. But somewhere along the line, it went horribly, and then it went worse, and we finally parted ways. And I ended up with custody of the two kids, which can tell you how bad off she was. And I suddenly had no adult supervision, and I could drink like I wanted to. I took the divorce very badly, even though it needed to happen. No adult around to kind of keep curbs on what I did. And I had two kids, and I was in over my head. I didn't know anything about parenting 24/7. And there I was trying to figure out how to put ponytails and hair, for Christ's sakes. I didn't know how to do that for my daughter. But so somewhere along that line, I turned back to drinking. I remembered it. I knew it worked. It certainly took me out of myself when I needed it to. And I turned back to drinking. And it picked right up where I left off and progressed rather quickly. Through my mid to late 20s, I was drinking. I was functional. I had a job. I had a car. I had custody of kids. We went to sporting events. They were in gymnastics. They were in this. Never mind. Dad always had a drink with them when we were doing these things, and drinking was the most important thing. My kids had to wait a lot of times to go do something till Dad felt like he could put down a drink long enough to pick up another drink to take in the car. Drank and drove every day. Like, again, these are not things I'm proud of, but the things I did in my drinking. Drank and drove all the time. Somewhere along the line, I picked up the third DUI. That was in Kansas. That was at the end of my military career. I got out of the military in 1998 because I was tired of the lifestyle and moving around all the time, and I had two kids to take care of. So I got out of the military and moved back to Pennsylvania with my kids. So we lived in Quakertown for most of their years. The growing up years were in Quakertown. Drinking became more frequent, more often. The quantity grew. I couldn't get enough to drink. I tried the beer. I tried I tried all the corrective actions in the book. Picked up the fourth DUI in 2001 in Coopersburg. Not a good place to go to be speeding through on New Year's Day. Picked up the fourth DUI there. They never caught up with each other, so I was offered ARD in Coopersburg for that Coopersburg DUI. I took it, and then so all I had to do was go to some classes, pay some fines, and do some things, some small things. I didn't do any of it. I was too busy. Who needs a driver's license to drive a car anyway? I had keys and a car. That's all you really need, so you should be able to drive a car. And I drove around without a license for many years after that. Like everything else we do wrong, it eventually catches up. My drinking, I picked up the morning drink. I was shaky in the morning, had to drink in the morning, picked that up along the line. Finally, the police picked me up twice for driving with a suspended license in 3 days. Same cop picked me up on the same road. He did tell me there's more than one road to New Jersey. You could try another road maybe next time. I just went on. I was on the same road because that's what I did. So then we had some serious time. All that shook out. I didn't show up to court when I was supposed to, and they sentenced me to 6 months in Bucks County for driving with a suspended license because of DUI twice. And I'd like to tell you know, if you're writing a script for a movie, we all know there's things that happen along our journey that should have got us sober. That should have been one of those events. I lost my kids. The sheriff's department came and picked me up. Lost my kids, my house, my dog, my car. Lost my job. Lost everything in that one night. So instead of getting sober, I drank while I was in jail. If you've been in Bucks County, they let you in the men's center. They let you walk. They used to let you walk up the street to go shopping. There was also an Uno's up the street in Doylestown. They served big, tall beers. I would try to pound a couple of those before I went back and signed back into jail. That didn't work out. They caught me for driving or drinking while I was in jail. Spent my time in jail, missed my kids, cried about it. The day I got out of jail, I was drunk, and so it went on. I kicked around the country. I went to live with relatives and helped them. And I don't know, by help them, I meant help myself to whatever they had. My mom and my grandmother and my son and I lived in the same house. It was like a Norman Rockwell picture gone wrong. I took advantage of that situation, took advantage of family. One thing that did happen when I was there, I had no money and no job. I was too proud to find a job. I did make my son get a job. So that was one thing I did do. But I stole from my mom's purse. My mom was a waitress. She worked her ass off for her tips, and I would go in her purse. So when Bill talks about stealing from his wife's purse in the big book, I can relate because I stole from my mom's purse so I could fuel my drinking. But I remember another thing that happened, and it didn't make a lot of sense to me at the time, but when I came to AA, I remember I didn't have any money. I didn't have any money in my wallet. On a Sunday, we were at the grocery store in Wisconsin. You could buy beer at the grocery store. And my mom said, "Why don't you go grab some beer? Go grab a six-pack of beer, and I'll bring it home, and we can have a beer." And I don't know about you, but a six-pack beer is not enough for me, let alone to have to share with somebody. So I remember putting that six-pack in the fridge and just having that sinking feeling like, those six beers are not going to be enough. Why should I even drink one of them? And that, to me, is alcoholism in a nutshell. But kicked around for a while, came back to Pennsylvania, lived in Wisconsin until they got sick of me, moved back to Pennsylvania, talked some family out of some money. About 3 weeks before I got sober, I came back from Wisconsin and I moved back in with an ex-girlfriend and, decided I was going to drive her car one Saturday when she wasn't home. Didn't have a license and I was drunk. I drove her car. She kicked me out. So I learned what homelessness is like in Telford. I lived in an abandoned house for 3 weeks. No picnic. That was November of 2006. Did not get me sober. In fact, I was happy because it was cold and it kept the alcohol could stay cold. while I was living in an abandoned house. Did sleep in my storage unit for a couple days. That I wouldn't recommend that. All my furniture was packed away, and I had to crawl in there every night to try to go to sleep. That all came at the end of my drinking. 3 weeks before I got sober, I got hit by a minivan in Satterton. I was riding my bicycle drunk, crossing Main Street in Satterton. Every cop car in 20 counties came out because it was a slow day, I guess, for the cops, and they all came out. I refused medical treatment. I refused medical treatment. I limped home and drank every bit of alcohol that was in my apartment. So, that's how it was at the end of my drinking, but did not get sober that night. It took those 3 more weeks. It took whatever that feeling, that horrible feeling. I can relate. And, you know, in Bill's story, Abby Thatcher comes to his house. His friend, his childhood friend comes in November of 1934. And they spend time and he tells them all this spiritual stuff and they talk for hours about it. Bill does not get sober that night. He doesn't get sober until December 11th, 1934. He spends the next three weeks drinking as much as he possibly can, fighting these ideas that Ebby left him with. And he goes into his last debauch. And that's where I was for those 3 weeks. I was just battling this idea that I had to get better, didn't know how to get better. Maybe it was hopeless. Maybe it wasn't. Finally, it all led to that 15th of January, 2007. And, that's the night that I called and asked for help. And I was out of plan B's and I needed help. And that set me on my path to AA. Knew nothing about AA. Probably had seen a movie where people were going to meetings in AA. I knew it meant like people were trying not to drink because I wouldn't have called it if it didn't mean that. But, I didn't know what they were all about, what was going to go on there. My vision was that I was going to have to spend the rest of my life like running from alcohol and hiding and not being able to go do things in this world. Like I was basically going to go to these meetings, hide with people, and then have to go home and hide again. And that's the attitude I had. But I was willing to try anything. And that old guy picked me up, took me to that first meeting on a Tuesday, went to a meeting on a Wednesday, went to a meeting on a Thursday. And that's kind of how my pattern went in early recovery. I'm a fan of a lot of meetings in early recovery. It saved my life. It kept me out of my own head. I spent a lot of time around people who were sober, who were not drinking, and we went to a lot of diners. I didn't have a car or a license, so I was at the mercy of whoever was giving me a ride that night, and that's what I did. My son wanted nothing to do with me, so I didn't have to worry about being Father of the Year. I would basically wake up in the morning, go to work, come home, go to a meeting or two, stay out as late as I could with people who were in sobriety and then go to bed and repeat the cycle the next day. And that's what I did. And, it almost drove me crazy. Cause turns out there's more to recovery than going to a lot of meetings. Again, I'm a fan of meetings. This is a meeting we're in tonight. You don't meet your sponsor without a meeting. You don't learn about the 12 steps without a meeting. You don't get the literature without a meeting. You don't make friendships without a meeting. But that meetings are not all it's about. The book talks about we found this fellowship, people who would not normally mix, but it says that's not the only thing that could hold us together. We had to find something bigger than that. So for about 6 months, I asked a couple guys to sponsor me. One guy said, I don't know you well enough. One guy said, I'm too busy. Another guy said, yes, and I never saw him again. I would advocate if you can't sponsor somebody, please help them find somebody that can sponsor them. I could have easily drank again based on the fact that I felt rejected. It was a blessing in disguise. I met a man. It was about June or July of 2007. He was speaking on a Tuesday night at a meeting. He was a dear friend of some of ours that came to this home group. His name was Tree Rich. And he spoke at the meeting I was at, and he talked about needing to help other people. He talked about being happy in sobriety. He talked about it, how essential it was to help and sponsor other people. I needed a sponsor, sounded like a good fit. I wanted to be happy in sobriety. I was busy in sobriety, but I wasn't feeling all that happy. In fact, I felt more angry, more fearful. I felt more everything without a drink. And that's what I know today to be the condition of an untreated alcoholic, somebody who does not have a solution in their life. I always thought my problem was drinking. Turns out my problem is me, and my solution was drinking, and I was allergic to my solution, and it was not serving me very well anymore. So I went up to him, and it's that typical thing, like with my head down, I said, do you think you could sponsor me? And he said, yes. And I avoided him for a week or two because I didn't know what that meant. And we finally got together, and we forged a relationship that continued until just this past year when he passed away in October. So what he showed me through the 12 steps, I had read the book. It was like early February of 07. Somebody gave me a book, and he put a little note in it, read this when you get a chance, read a section at a time. I had read the big book a couple times already. There was some interesting material in the big book. A lot of it didn't make sense to me. I don't know why you would try to find people that you would hurt in this world. I was avoiding them for my whole life. I don't know why you would do that. I didn't know why you were supposed to pray for people who offended you. Like, those things made no sense to me. The jaywalker part I really thought was funny. I don't know if you read the book. I don't want to spoil it for you. But there's a section about the jaywalker. I thought it was hilarious. I said, what the hell is wrong with that guy? He's an idiot. He's a moron. Like, what? He's insane. And then that paragraph that says, now replace the jaywalking with alcohol. And I was like, oh, man. So that's who I am. I'm a jaywalker, and I'm jaywalking with alcohol. But as far as what the book meant to me by myself, it kept me busy, because that's literally what I was trying to do. Keep my hands on this book, read this book at night, and not drink. And again, what I know today is that that book is best served if you read it with somebody who's had the experience with what's in that big book. What are you looking for from the book? It's how do you recover from this disease? How do you get to that? They teach you about your problem. They show you that there's a solution to your problem, and they teach you the steps that it takes to make that solution come into being. A spiritual experience, apparently that's what we're looking for. Because in the 12th step, it says having had a spiritual awakening, which is another word for a spiritual experience. Then we, as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. So apparently that's what we're looking for, is this spiritual experience. What is that? I don't know what it is for each individual. I know what my path has taken me, and basically it's how I am introduced to God and how I have a relationship with God. And that's what my sponsor said to me, is you're going to have to find a relationship with God. Well, I had all the excuses in the world why I didn't need God in my life, why I didn't have God in my life. Most of them are in We Agnostics. When you read the chapter, it was written to somebody like me who had all the reasons in the world. It makes a man weak and to admit that he needs a God. Church is worthless. All the people in religion are evil, horrible people. How can there be a God if there's wars and there's all this stuff going on in the world? And all that stuff about why I shouldn't have a God. I had plenty of good excuses why I didn't need God in my life. Meanwhile, I'm living this horrible life, this horrible existence. Alcohol is running my life. It's running into the ground. What choice do I really have? The book talks about being at a crossroads between living life on spiritual principles or living life the way we live it now in alcoholism. So what choice did I really have? So wasn't all that thrilled about looking for God, but I said, why not? You know, what do I have to lose? And that open-mindedness was what my sponsor drilled into me and said, that's all you need to move forward in this program. And, you know, I didn't know. I'm glad you didn't have to take do the fourth and fifth step right out of the gate, because I wouldn't have trusted anybody. I wouldn't have trusted myself, to be honest, on paper, and I wouldn't have trusted another person in this world to listen to the things that I've done. I don't know what you've done during your drinking years. I had some pretty horrible stuff on there. At least I thought it was horrible stuff. And it was stuff that I thought made me worthless, made me a piece of shit. Why would my kids want me in their life? I don't blame them for kicking me out of their life when these are the things I've done to them. And I kept those things hidden my whole life from people who weren't alcoholic. But the book talks over and over about one alcoholic winning the trust of another alcoholic, or intensive work of one alcoholic with another. There was just something about the fellowship as a whole and my sponsor as an individual that made me feel okay that I could share this stuff with somebody. That this was the stuff that was keeping me down, keeping me pinned in the person that I was, and that I could share these things with somebody, and I could be relieved of the problems and the bad things that these things have caused to me. So I took a chance. I was diligent on paper. I wrote a lot of stuff down, half expecting him to kick me to the curb, and we sat down and we went over that stuff together. And turns out it wasn't so bad. It's certainly not stuff I was proud of, but he related his experience with me. I didn't feel all that great. You know, when they say take time after you do your fifth step, take an hour and reflect on what's happened, take the book down from the shelf and all that. I was feeling pretty raw when I shared those things with him, but I also felt some kind of weight lifted off my shoulders. And that's when I really felt like I was part of AA. And I had heard a lot of people come to AA. It's a wonderful social environment for a lot of people. People stay sober on the fellowship of AA. But I really felt like I was a part of what my sponsor had been talking about, that I was taking action necessary to help alleviate my alcoholism, to arrest my disease and find a happy, joyous, and free life. And we didn't stop there. He kept me on the path. I won't talk in ad nauseum about every step, but some of the ones that I thought, like when we got to amends didn't sound as bad as it would have sounded at the beginning when I first got sober, because I had been trying to avoid a lot of people I'd owed amends to for a long time. And I owed a lot of money in this world. Thankfully, it's all been paid back, sometimes slowly, sometimes quickly. But it was really the personal relationships that I would focus on that had really changed. My kids didn't want anything to do with me. My daughter physically lived away from me. My son lived in the same house as me and wanted nothing to do with me. And those were relationships that I would have thought would never have been restored. I was sober about 7 or 8 months, and my son tried to commit suicide. And I was left at I remember sitting outside the hospital saying, should I call his mom or not? And the old me would have been like, I'm not calling her. Screw her. She doesn't need to know. She's a horrible person. Plus, how will this reflect on me as a parent that he's doing this under my watch? Like, how selfish can you get? Her son is lying in a hospital bed, and I'm thinking I'm not going to call her and talk to her. So I did call her, and she flew out to be at our son's bedside, and I was able to make amends to her. And it didn't matter who had done what to who, how many times, or what. My job was to take care of my side of the street, and I did with her. And that started that journey. My son, he pulled through that, and he and I were able to slowly start to put a relationship back together. Because my ex-wife and I had talked and spent time together, when my daughter faced peril in Mississippi, my ex-wife called me and said, I need you to come here and be here for our daughter. And I went there, and I was there for her. And those relationships didn't change overnight. It didn't magically become kumbaya. But I could tell you today, like, I have the love, and I have relationships with both my children that I would have never thought possible, would have never been possible without the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've made those things right that needed to be made right. I remember I had a landlord who I owed a lot of money to. I don't know if you can relate, not paying the rent when you drink. Owed a lot of money to him, found him, and went to him, made the approach, and said, I owe you a lot of money. I don't know how much you think I owe you, but I'm willing to listen to whatever you say, and maybe we could work out a deal, and I could pay so much back at a time. And his wife and he were like, we had been so worried about you. One day you lived there, next minute you didn't live there. We're glad to hear you're okay. Yes, you can pay back the money this much at a time. But the guy who's living in where you used to live has a problem with alcohol. Do you think you might want to go talk to him about his drinking? Now, I don't know how stuff like that works in this world. There's only one reason I can think something like that happens, is that God put me here to help other people. I know I've spoken a lot in times, and a lot of times I don't give God the credit that God deserves. And the good thing here is you can find your own God, especially if you're brand new. This is not a church revival. This is not Hallelujah pounding the Bible. There's some good stuff in the Bible. There's some good stuff in every religion, every denomination. It's your own journey to what you find in this world that's bigger than you, and somebody can help you find that. But I can only think that over time that God has shown me and put those things in my path that have helped me gain a better understanding of him and develop a stronger bond with him or her or it, whatever you believe in. So the amends came over time. The good thing about this program is it's not a one and done deal. There are steps 10 and 11. They talk about continuously improving and continuously making amends for things you do. Go figure, I'm still a human being. I still make mistakes. I still get pissed off at people driving slow in front of me. Don't understand what that's about. I still am upset when I can't run the show like I want to run the show. And other people in this world who aren't alcoholic, they might just get to be angry people, kick the dog, yell at their wife, but I'm an alcoholic. And what my sponsor and this program has taught me is that that stuff I can't afford to have. I can't carry that stuff around. I've got to deal with it. I've got to pray about it. The things that are going on in my life that cause upset or concern, I've got to talk to another alcoholic about it. And I've got to make things right when I make them wrong. So that's what I've been taught to do. When I don't do those things, I get jammed up. I've been in this program for 15 years. I've had times when I've been riding the wave of the 12 steps. I've had times when I kind of forget what brought me here. And I suffer for those times when I'm not paying attention to what I'm supposed to be doing. Thankfully, I've never had to pick up a drink, and I've gotten back on course. But it's been difficult at times. And my sponsor now takes me right back to the 12 steps. It's a solution that fixes all problems, not just my drinking problem. So through step 10, I take care of things on a daily basis. Through 11, I try to improve my conscious contact with God. And the big thing for me, and I could talk forever about it, is helping other people. When you read the book, it's the way this thing started. We don't have AA unless that friend of Bill's, they were childhood friends, hadn't seen each other in 15 years. That friend of his came to him in New York City to talk to him about getting sober. Not because, well, partially because Bill needed to get sober, but part of it was because it was part of that program that his friend was part of that said, you have to help other people in this world. It's imperative for my recovery to help other alcoholics. Bill Wilson looks for Dr. Bob in Akron, finds Dr. Bob in Akron, not because Dr. Bob's in desperate need, because Bill's in desperate need. Because Bill needs to help another alcoholic. Because something Bill picked up along the line from the Oxford group and from being in the hospital in New York was that it's imperative that I help other alcoholics. And my sponsor told me, he said, I don't know what's going to happen from this program, but I'm only going to ask you to do one thing. And when I've given you this spiritual awakening, when you find this spiritual awakening, that you're going to help other people. And I was like, yeah, sure. We'll worry about that when we get to it. Well, it came sooner than I thought. I remember I was sober about 9 months. And again, I only know my recovery. I had somebody ask me to sponsor him, and I was only 9 months sober. And I had heard a lot of words that you can't sponsor anybody till you're X amount of years or Y a number of years. You can't help somebody. So I went to my sponsor expecting him to say, sorry, you're going to have to wait a while before you help somebody. But, you know, be his friend, shake his hand, do whatever. My sponsor said, you have something to offer him that he does not have. It's imperative that you help him. So I took that as like, okay, I'm supposed to help this person. And I did. And it's been nonstop since that. That was in the first year of recovery. And it's been nonstop in some degree or another sponsoring people through my 15 years of recovery. Not everybody has stayed. We know if you've been around a while, you see a lot of faces and then you don't see those faces. But one thing that's happened is my spiritual life has been enlarged through that sponsorship, helping other people. And my life has changed because of it. 90% of what I've gotten in recovery is from sponsoring other people. With all due respect to meetings and with the literature, with the grapevine, and that's all great stuff. But my sponsor taught me that it's imperative that I help other people. And that's the thing that has kept me sober all these years. He also taught me about service, being in service. It's a triangle with three sides, that you should be in service to AA. That started out early with making coffee. That started out with being in general service, being part of a group, being a GSR, those kind of things that maybe some people haven't even heard about yet. But it's about being there for other people. It's time for Brian to quit being in charge of the universe and quit thinking that Brian is the center of the universe. Selfish and self-centered, we read about it tonight. That was my problem in this world. I thought everything revolved around me. I thought if I could just make people do what I want them to do, can't they see the wisdom in what I'm saying? Can't they see how important I am and what I'm saying? That should be the way they do things. So when they don't do them that way, I get pissed off. I try harder to make them do them. Then they get pissed off. Then I'm resentful at them and so on and so forth. And I pick up a drink and I get drunk at them for not listening to me. So what do I have to do? I have to get out of my own way. The world is not about me. The world is about other people. What can I bring to the table to help other people? And that goes for the whole world. That's in church. That's at work. Man, it's, you know, relatively speaking, it can be pretty easy to be spiritual in an AA meeting. We're all here generally for the same purpose. Everybody's got their best face on. We know what's expected when we're here, but in the real world is the time. It's like those people out there do not have a program. I'm telling you right now. Like you go somewhere and you're at work and you're like talking and you're like, oh, come on, don't worry about what that guy's doing. Just pray for him. Like that does not go over that well in the real world. So I find the biggest challenges, but it says practice these principles in all our affairs. And that's what my sponsor taught me. And that's what I try to teach people that I work with. So recovery has been a blessing. Like it really has. Like life is still life. Like I've seen people die. Good friends of ours who passed away sober. I've had family members pass away. I've had that mother whose wallet that I stole money out of. She relied on me to move her back to this area. And now I take care of her. She's in a nursing home and I take care of things for her. I have a son who needs my help, spent 5 years in prison. You know, when he asked me that question that day, why don't you just effing quit drinking? He found out it's a very difficult question to answer. He spent 5 years in prison for crimes committed while he was high or drunk. And I was there for him. I went to visit him, hang out with him, talk to him, write him letters, try to be a good dad. I can't go back and be, I was not a good father. I can't be that again. That time has come and gone. But I can be something good going forward for both my kids. I have three granddaughters. I have a grandson who's on the way. They get to have a peepaw that never drinks, who can be there for them, who can take them to do things, who can teach them life's lessons, who can be a sober grandfather. My granddaughter's been coming to this meeting. She's been sober for almost 10 years. So she's almost 10 years old. So she's good. She's been coming to this meeting with me off and on Saturday mornings for years. In fact, the other day, I haven't seen her in a while because of COVID. She said, do you still go to that meeting? Can I come when I come there? And I'm like, of course you can come to it. So I'm a good grandfather. I spoil the heck out of them, but I think that's part of the deal. I think grandparents are supposed to spoil the grandkids. But, I'm a good brother. My brother found out, he called me from Arizona, one day that he was having trouble with alcohol. He needed help. And you want to know how AA works? I picked up a little book. Look for an inner group in Arizona, called the inner group. They called somebody in his town, and that somebody in his town called him within 15 minutes of my brother calling me. And my brother called me back. He's like, who the hell do you know in Arizona? But that's where my brother got the help, and he's been sober for 8 years now. There are tragic stories. My father who never stopped drinking. He drank his whole life, hated the world, resented the world. He died of cirrhosis and esophageal hemorrhaging by himself, on fixed income, living in his own little apartment. It would be very easy to have said that I don't owe amends to that man, because it was brutal growing up. But I sat down with him and tried to explain what I was part of, and I made things on my side of the street right. I was not a good son. I took advantage of his guilt a lot of time. I took a lot from him when I could. I took a lot from a lot of people when I could. But I was able to make things right with him to the best of our ability, or to the best of my ability, before he passed away. We could call and talk to each other on the phone once a week, whereas he had no relationship with my brother or my sister. So AA gave me all those things. I guess the one thing that I wanted tonight is that if everybody here is in some degree of sobriety, but if you're new or really new and life is difficult, the drinking is a major problem. We can help you put down the drink here in AA. There's people here who know how to do that. But you get so much more being here than that. If that's all you're getting is a day without a drink, you're selling this thing short. You can get so much more from it. It changes the way you live life. It changes the way you approach life. It makes you happy. I got a lot of things in recovery. I met my wife in recovery. We've been married for 14 years. I bought a house in recovery. I have a car in recovery. I have a mortgage in recovery. I have a good job in recovery. But the best gift I got was when I walk past a reflective surface today, I can look a mirror or I can look in a window and see the person there and not be ashamed of who that person is. I don't have to regret the things that I've done. I can look at relationships I have in my life and know I've done the best I can to make them right. And that's the thing that because things come and go. Jobs come and go. Houses come and go. Cars come and go, but when you have a sense of peace and ease with yourself, that's the thing that I want to be able to give to people. If you haven't found that yet, it's here. If you haven't found a sponsor yet, find somebody who looks like they're pretty happy being sober. If you can find those things, if you found those things and had that awakening, that change, Read that page 567, and it talks about the change that needs to take place in us, the way we look at things, the way we live life. If you've had that, you have to share it with other people. If you sit on that, it'll get stale and you'll drink again. Step one says I'm powerless over alcohol. If I don't enlarge my spiritual condition, I will drink again. I have a million reasons not to drink today. I have a job. I have a house. I have a wife. That stuff will not stop me. My wife had 17 years sober, and now she has 5 months sober again because she forgot what got us here and what got us to this point. You want to see this disease in action? Watch it take somebody down who thought they had everything that it takes to be sober. So today I'm sober. It is just for today. Today's getting late. I know when I leave here, I'm going to go to bed. There's a pretty good chance I won't drink today, but I have tomorrow based on the things that I do tomorrow for tomorrow's sobriety. I want to thank the group for asking me to come out and speak. I hope I was able to make some kind of sense with everybody. That's all I got. Thanks.